This week on Art of the Air, our whole show features author Robert Wolf discussing his new book, Coyotes and Stars, Stories from the American Southwest, a singular work of Western Americana, reading several selections along with his wife and musician, Lonnie Kolak. Our spotlight's on Dune Arts Foundation's production of She Loves Me, with lead cast members Kate Turner and Tristan Hepperland.
Express yourself through art, and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art, and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther, Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Dunes Arts Foundation, Dunes Summer Theater, characters that are going to be part of the next coming production that's running July 25th through August 10th, She Loves Me, a musical with music by Jerry Bock and lyrics by Sheldon Harnick, a classic book musical. And they're going to tell us about it. We have Kate Turner here, who's playing Amelia, and Tristan Haberland, and he's playing George. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, very nice to meet both of you.
Well, real quickly, we're going to start with you, Kate. Tell us just a little bit about your personal background as an actor, and we'll then let Tristan also tell, and then we'll talk a little bit about the show itself.
Yes, I just graduated with a BA in theater and vocal performance from the University of Notre Dame. So I'm freshly out of school. I've been lucky enough to be at Dunes for the cabaret the past 3 years, and then I was also part of Bridges of Madison County last summer, which was such an awesome experience. And I grew up doing community theater and have been lucky enough to work the past couple summers doing some summer stock theater. And now I'm ready to just be, you know, auditioning and working full time now.
How long have you done theater? When did you start? Like in your...
I started, I believe I was 4 years old. My mom always says I loved High School Musical. And my mom says that she heard me singing it and was like, oh, maybe Kate can sing a little bit. So I started doing community theater. I was a squirrel in Willy Wonka. That was my first gig. And then I was hooked from there.
Excellent. And I know I put my daughter on stage at 5 months and Fiddler on the Roof was the baby. So we
Oh my gosh.
So, well.
We were just talking about Fiddler on the Roof because Bach and Harnick wrote Fiddler on the Roof, and
It's one of my personal favorite musicals, and though I don't consider myself like an actor, one of the few roles I would love to play is Tevye. So, but enough about me, let's talk about you, Tristan.
Yes, I'm going into my sophomore year at University of Central Florida. I was homeschooled throughout all of my youth, so I went through multiple different youth programs. There was a program called Arts in Motion that is like a K-12 program that I did throughout my childhood instead of like a public school system. This is my first year at the Dunes and my first time in Indiana at all. So it's been really fun, but this is my first year doing summer stock, and wow, it's been a great time. Really excited.
Excellent. Yeah. It's a great facility there. And they've recently upgraded. So tell us a little bit about, She Loves Me, what the story is, and, you've been in rehearsal for a while. So, but, tell us a little bit about that.
So George and Malia are they work in the same shop, and it takes place in Budapest. And unbeknownst to them, they're writing love letters to each other. They've met through a Lonely Hearts Club, which I guess is an older version of like Hinge. they as coworkers, they really butt heads, and they have a, you know, unique sort of hatred for each other, but they actually have fallen in love writing letters to each other, and that unravels throughout the show. And you know, it's a really ensemble-based show, and it's very collaborative. And so you also get to meet characters like Alona and Kodai and Marichek, and you really fall in love with all of the characters that work in the shop.
Excellent.
It definitely falls into the opposites attract theme that we have going on here this season. It's a really touching musical for me, especially because it's been my favorite for such a long time. And I just kind of just fell in love with it.
The music is beautiful. Yes.
Well, like you said, it's from the people who created Fiddler on the Roof. But in the rehearsal process, how long you've been in rehearsal at this point? This show will be airing somewhat later in July. But tell us about that.
So we started, I think, three weeks ago.
Yeah.
But no, it's been amazing. I've never worked with such a like community-based cast before that's so like welcoming, especially to new people, and so nice. And it's been a very, very awesome experience. And the show quality has been beyond anything I've seen working in the past. So it's going to be a really, really good show. I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, we have a great team of directors and wonderful director, music director, and stage managers, and then an awesome cast. So it's been, we're starting to, you know, pull the whole show together now, and it's super fun. And, you know, there's so much to uncover with these characters, but also it's just lighthearted and a true story of love that I think will speak to a lot of different generations and ages. And
thinking about that, were both of you, did you grow up in families that enjoyed musicals? Is that how you were introduced so early? Especially Tristan, you said, you know, you've loved it for a long time.
Yes. I started in musical theater when I was 5, kind of following my sister's footsteps. They were also put in at a very, very young age. Being homeschooled, there's a little less opportunities for musical theater, but my entire family loves the arts and kind of just put me in at a young age, and I've grown up with it. It's all I've ever known. So it's been a very big part of my life and my family's lives, I think.
How many people are in the cast besides you two?
I think it's 12.
Sounds right.
I could be wrong. I believe 12 people.
Yeah. So a bigger cast for the Dunes, but it makes for more energy and, you know, more
conflict.
Sound. Love.
More conflict and more love. Yes.
Well, we're in our final minute here. I'm going to give you the opportunity to tell us about the show dates, times, and how you can get tickets.
Yes. So the show is running July 25th through August 10th. You can get tickets at dunesarts.org.
It's Fridays and Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central and Sundays at 2 p.m. Central.
Right. And it's only the ticket prices varies $30 to $35, I know. And they have a group of 4 where they receive a $10 off of each ticket. So that's great. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing. That's Kate Turner and Tristan Haberland. And they are in She Loves Me, July 25th through August 10th. Dunes Arts Foundation's Dunes Summer Theater production right there along just off of 12. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing not only your personal journeys, but about the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, have a great time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Hello, I'm Larry Breckner, board chair for Lakeshore Public Media and also a sustaining supporter. As Northwest Indiana's public broadcaster on TV, radio, and digital, we're not only bringing you the best of PBS and NPR, but more importantly, serve as a vital community resource for great local programs like Regionally Speaking, Eye in the Arts, Friends and Neighbors, Let's Eat with Chef Nick, Art in the Air, Building Blocks, and more. Please help protect my Lakeshore Public Media with your support by visiting lakeshorepublicmedia.org/give.
This is Peter Marks, former theater critic of the Washington Post, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are delighted to welcome back Robert Wolfe and Bonnie Kolak to Art on the Air. They were featured on our August 9th, 2019 program. Robert is an American writer, journalist, and entrepreneur. His nonfiction writing focuses on everyday life, frequently that of farmers and other rural Americans. In 1990, he established Free River Press, publishing numerous titles and personally authoring many of those books. His newest is Coyotes and Stars, Stories from the American Southwest. As an adolescent, one of his goals was to live in every town and city and have conversations with everyone. Poets and writers wrote. He was a ranch hand in New Mexico, a journalist in Chicago, a teacher both in an inner city Brooklyn school and penitentiary, as well as a doctoral candidate in philosophy, a dabbler in art, a hitchhiker, and a hobo. Bonnie is a Renaissance woman, singer, songwriter, actor, painter, sculptress, printmaker, ceramicist, book illustrator, and all-around beautiful person. And for me, Bonnie and Bob are treasured, beloved friends. Thank you for joining us again on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Bonnie and Bob. It's such a joy seeing you.
Thank you very much, Esther and Larry.
Well, we appreciate you coming back on the show, both of you. And Bonnie's had her own interview with us in the past, and you can look at that on our archive. But Bob, we want to get your origin story, and how I always set that up is how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about your origin.
Yeah, I trace it back to my adolescence in New Canaan, Connecticut, which is an extremely affluent bourgeois community. The men there commuted to New York every day. These were businessmen. And the values, their values and their wives' values were not mine. I mean, I had read enough to know that the world was much larger than New Canaan, and I wanted to see it. Because of my reading, and a lot of it of regionalist writings in art of the 1930s, I became enamored with this country. I saw it as it was, a quilt work of regional cultures, and with distinct personalities personalities sort of distinct to that, their regions. And this was also fed by, not only by books like USA by John Dos Passos, or Kerouac's On the Road, or Sandburg's poetry, and autobiography, but also by art of the 1930s. Thomas Hart Benton supplied one of the major inspirations for my cross-country travels and my explorations. He did a great mural, which is now in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. It's called America Today, and I believe he did it in 1932. Prior to that, Benton had been traveling around the country, walking a lot, but also traveling by car through the South, through the Midwest, the West, and he always drew, he always sketched everywhere he went. And he sketched people working, cotton pickers in Georgia fields, cowboys at work, you name it, welders. He went into steel mills and sketched the men at the blast furnaces. And in New York, where he lived for many years, he did harbor operations and just drew people all over the city and so forth. He took these sketches in 1932. He was paid by the New School for Social Research, not just for supplies. And he did this magnificent mural, America Today, which consists of about 7 or 8 panels, each one depicting a distinct part of this nation. As you walk into this room, he was done in a small classroom at the New School. The first mural is one on the Mississippi Delta. Then you get to one on the Midwest and the Far West, and one on harbor operations and so forth. And then there are two panels on city life. And so this was so colorful and so powerful that it really fired me up to travel around the country. I think I was 16 when my aunt brought me there to see it. And so because I had read On the Road and Sandburg's Travels and so forth, I decided, well, if I want to be an American writer and depict the parts of the country, I have to travel. So I took off riding freight trains and hitchhiking across country. And I did that off and on for about 30 years, actually. I think the last time I went on the road was the summer of 1981. And it's a long story. I did a three-day freight train ride with two Mexicans, one of them trying to get back to Mexico and one trying to get just to New Mexico. Anyway, 3 days. I got to know all kinds of people, and I did work many jobs. I even taught in the Brooklyn Ghetto School, a school for black women who wanted to get into the nursing profession. I was a surveyor. I taught school in Española, New Mexico. I worked on a ranch outside of Santa Fe. So all these experiences kept piling up. And when I met Bonnie and we got married and went down to Nashville in 1989, I had to invent a living for myself, and I went to work for the Board of Education teaching GED to the homeless. And I was assigned to Matthew 25, which is a shelter for homeless men. And I found that most of these men had high school diplomas, GEDs, even some college degrees and one master degree. So I had to invent something else to do. And my boss at the board said, well, just invent something. I said, well, Dennis, I ran a writing workshop. I said, well, I had taught composition at Chicago colleges, and I just began doing that with these men, asking them how they became homeless. And so we began generating quite a few stories. The workshop went on for a little over 2 years, and in that time we published 6 little chapbooks. And I must say that Nashville was very kind to the project. Nashville had a very large homeless population, and at that time the country was very much aware of the homeless problem, and there were steps being taken to address homelessness. Tipper Gore, the wife of the vice president, was also involved in, we were helped a lot by Tipper Gore, the wife of Vice President Gore, and she persuaded one of the Junior League of Nashville to fund one of the books. And All Things Considered did a story on it, on homelessness, on the workshop. And that got us some national publicity. And then when Bonnie and I moved up to Iowa, I said farmers need to be heard. And by that time, I decided that the press was going to focus on much more than just the homeless problem. I wanted to document as much of America as I could. And so when we moved to Iowa, I said, I'm going to work with farmers. And I did. For 2 years, we sat around the kitchen table, a neighboring farmer's kitchen table. And there were about 4 or 5 of us families that sat and wrote. And we did, Free River Press published 3 little books. And that first book, called Voices from the Land, got a lot of national publicity. Morning Edition did a story on it, and the AP did a story that went in every major daily except the Wall Street Journal. And the phones rang off the hook for 3 days. And that book went through 3 printings, and all 3 of those farm books went through 3 printings. After that, small towns began hiring me, and in 3 days I could do a small book with 20 people or less. And then I began going around the country, going down to the Mississippi Delta and going out to the Far West. By 2006, I was running a writing workshop in New Mexico, and that was the genesis of Coyotes and Stars, latest book from Free River Press.
So, Bob, you were working in a shelter, so you had access to all those men to do this. How did you go about reaching out to the farm community and all those other communities to gather people to do that? Or did all that press sort of...
No. When we moved out to Iowa, I heard that a neighboring farmer, Bill Welsh, was going to host a farm tour. So I went on the tour. I'd already had it in mind that I was wanted to do books with farmers. And I talked to his son, Greg, and Greg loved the idea, and he persuaded his father that this was a good idea. And so Bill and his wife, Esther, and Greg began recruiting other neighboring farmers, and that's how we got the group together.
That's lovely. And so it was farmers, and then what group did you...
In small towns. I mean, I was contacted by two small towns in Iowa that had heard the morning edition story and probably had read some of the books. And so, yeah, they contacted me, Independence, Iowa, and Claremont, Iowa. After that, it was my own initiative going into the Mississippi Delta and just making contacts. I actually had a friend down there who had been a farmer for 12 years, and he wrote a little book for me called Dirt and Duty, How I Came to Love the Land and Loathe Farming. And actually, I had asked him to write that book, begin writing it, and so that I could show excerpts to the farmers here in Iowa. And that would convince them that it was possible for even a farmer to write a book.
Bringing you forward to your current work, and, you know, we may want to hear more about your story, and what it's reminiscent of your entire journey is kind of what Stud Circle did years ago with Working, which is very close to my heart because I actually did the Northwest Indiana premiere of the actual show itself. And but how it explores working people and retelling their stories, you know, of course, in the book and the musical, which is smaller than the book and everything. But yeah, you seem to have this technique of letting people tell their stories through you and everything. So your new book, we maybe have touched on it, but let's go forward to that a little bit and tell us a little about how that came to be.
Since I knew I wanted to do a workshop, I hired a publicist. Free River Press hired a publicist to spread the word out in New Mexico, particularly in Santa Fe, that I was coming out and wanted to record stories. So that helped me get an opening with one of the senior centers in town. And that senior center was one that attracted a lot of people for lunch. They served lunch every day. And it was this very interesting group of people that would come, a mixture of Hispanics and Anglos. Anyway, they did a lot of publicity on that. And we rounded up at least 20 people for that first workshop. And that was in 2006. And we ran it for a full week. These were seniors who were willing to write for 6 hours a day. And it's a... it's a way of getting people to write that I developed when I taught at Roosevelt College in Chicago. We read a story that we want, that I want them to talk about, a story that serves as a model. We might read two of them, pass it around the table, and everyone reads something. And then we talk about what made it work. Then they start telling the story that they want to write. And people will ask them questions about that in their story, things they want to know more about. And then we get into the writing. Now, the writing might take an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then we do a read through and take a break for lunch, come back, do more writing, more comments on the writing, and so forth. And that continues until after five days. Writers will have done at least one story, and some of them will have done two, and possibly a few might have done three stories. It's a very fruitful workshop. And that first, this, The first book we published in New Mexico, Ayer y Ahora, Stories from Northern Santa Fe and Northern New Mexico, won the Heritage Preservation Award for publication from the state of New Mexico. And I just continued doing workshops in Santa Fe. There were some foundations that funded the project. And I did work in other towns, in Tucumcari, New Mexico, in a little town called Naravaisa, which is now a ghost town, to get the really the rural stories.
You know, that comes from you being such a skilled facilitator, having taken part in one of the workshops. Your guidance and presence, I think, gives a comfort for people to share these stories because they're quite intimate. And
yeah, they are. And we end up bonding. There's quite a bit of bonding that goes on because the first thing we do before we even read a story is to go around the room and really get to know a little bit about the individuals. And of course, they get to know one another even better at the end of 3 days or 5 days. And they build bonds there. And the bonds are such that I stay in touch with many of them and have over the years. And when we went to do a reading, Bonnie and I went on a reading tour back in June. We read in Santa Fe and Taos and Tucumcari and Amarillo and a little town called Ojosarco. In each of these towns, I went there because there were writers from these towns who had contributed to the book. So it was a reunion in effect. Yeah. So there's a good deal of bonding that goes on.
You know, I have sort of and I should know the answer to this, but I don't. Have you written a book about your life? Because, you know, like even the freight trains, you know, they've been shown in movies and in books as having sort of a romance of adventure around it. But the reality of spending 3 days must be wildly different. Have you done a book about your whole?
I did a book called In Search of America.
In Search of America, right.
Yes, which was about just that, about my time in the 60s, from New Canaan through 68, I think it was, or 74. Yeah. Yes, and I'm working on another book about Untitled, which is just about the same kind of adventures I had in the summer of 1980 and the summer of 1981.
Oh, good. Because you were just such a brilliant writer.
Anyway, would you like to hear a story from one of these?
Definitely.
One of the sections?
Definitely.
The first one I'll read is by Tom Hamill, who was a 6'3" artist from Maine. A very loud, deep bass voice. Interesting guy. Now, I knew him at Claude's Bar. Claude's Bar was the central hangout for people of the Bohemian colony, you might say. Canyon Road was the center of Bohemian life in Santa Fe in those days. There probably is no Bohemian life now in Santa Fe. But anyway, in those days, it was a very active art scene. And Canyon Road was it. There were a lot of established painters on the road. And Tom was one of them. And Claude's Bar was where we all went to drink. And this story is called Claude James versus Finn O'Hara. An incident at Claude's Bar. Claude James owned a bar on Canyon Road, a meeting place for a cross-section of Santa Fe. Everybody came to it. It was a mixed bag of assorted cookies. Claude was an incredible woman, gifted, raised in Paris and New York, migrated to Santa Fe with a charismatic and unique personality. Finn O'Hara was one of the assorted cookies. He was one of those talented failures, an alcoholic who wasted his talents. But he had charm and was liked, but had a bitter and acid tongue. Claude didn't like him, and vice versa. Then came a Saturday night, bar packed to the rafters, all the cookies plus Hal West and me, and then it happened. Finn was drunk, and so was Claude. She was holding forth with tales of Parisian life. Then Finn moved in, not wanting to be upstaged. He insulted her. His back was to the wall, and Claude, who had an arm like my thigh, swung at him. He ducked, and her fist hit the wall with a loud thwack. The bar became silent as a tomb. Finn said, "Is that your best shot, Claude?" Finn was ushered out quickly and didn't reappear for some time. Next day, Claude, with bandaged right hand, was her usual self. That was her gift. Nothing fazed this remarkable woman, my dear friend. Yeah, Claude's was quite a place. There was one of my friends who now is retired, but had been a very prominent lawyer, got drunk there one night, passed out under one of the tables, and was locked in for the night. They just missed it. That was
Claude's. Well, you know, after a brief break, we'll return to our guests today, Bob Wolf and Bonnie Kolak, here on Art in the Air. Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Clay Jenkinson for Listening to America, and you are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and WVLP 103.1 FM.
And you're listening to our guests today, Bob Wolf and Bonnie Kolak, on Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
I'd like to read one more story by Tom Hamill. It's called The Day the Sofa Was Sawed in Two. I lived on Canyon Road for 25 years. Walla Paloo was my landlady, a wonderful, generous lady. We were close friends. During the 70s, the hippie invasion occurred. Willa had two rental houses besides the one she lived in. I lived in one. The remaining one was rented to a couple of St. John's students. All went well until Willa noticed this unit was visited endlessly by young people, hippies, at various hours. I noticed it too and got suspicious. One day she heard a hand-sawing noise coming from the house. She thought it strange and called me. I hadn't heard it because my house was in back. Their door being unlocked, we entered. The fumes of drugs were overpowering, but what was shocking was the sofa. It had been sawed in two. The couple were giggling and sitting on the parts with a saw and sawdust in between, proud of what they had done. "Why did you do it?" I asked. "We wanted to make a love seat." It was a life-draining experience for us both. Poor Willa, who had not been well, had to be supported. We called the police, who had been staking out the house, to come at once and arrest the couple, who had been dealing and using. They paid for the sofa and vanished to jail, never to attempt to saw another sofa. Hopefully.
Do some people are reluctant to open up to you? I mean, you talked a little bit on how you did that. And of course, this is the format of our show, is we always get people asking their origin story. So that kind of opens the door. But do you have trouble getting people to open up to you sometimes? They just do not want to talk about their story?
Well, it's rare because the project is self-selective. In other words, I can't force anybody to come. They have to want to tell their story. There's only a few occasions when I have persuaded someone who was reluctant to come, and that might be the few instances when they I couldn't get them to write. Would you like to hear another? Have Bonnie read a story from a book called Coyotes and Stars.
Yes, please.
Yeah, that book.
I've heard of that book, Coyotes and Stars. this story is by Sue West. She was the daughter of a rancher that I worked for off and on for Actually, for two summers and then part of one winter, I took care of the ranch while they were up in Wyoming looking for some property to buy. And Gene West, her father, was a real character. I mean, he was well known in Santa Fe. He was he looked like a movie star. He could have been another Gary Cooper. In fact, he was in a Walt Disney Western called The Nine Lives of El Fago Baca. But Gene was a tall, rangy guy, very much an actor. The whole family, in fact, were actors. Whatever they did, whether they were stonemasons or ranchers, they were actors. And Gene, anyway, he was one hell of a character. And his daughter Sue was there when I lived there. And this is a story she wrote about the dances that her parents would have at the ranch house.
Hi, Larry and Esther.
Well, welcome, Bonnie.
Hi.
Okay, I love these stories very much, and I loved reading them when we went on our book tour. The home on the ranch where I spent my childhood was adobe, made of mud bricks by Mexicans 100 years before my youth, imperfectly shaped to the closeness of the brown sod, and with each room built without forethought to go up and down with the shape of the land. The front porch that held the imperfect thick walls was supported by white pillars of carved wood, chipped by years of dry winds and blowing New Mexico rains. I adored this home. It had a soul that made each of the children raised under its roof reach out for color and drama in their lives. I was born there in December 1946, the youngest of a family of six, freckled-faced, nearsighted, and slightly redheaded. Chiquaco was our name for this home, where I spent my first 20 years. The memories of this time were seldom slow and quiet, but exciting and hectic, for the West family had a certain zest for living, a capacity to make each occasion special, stretching it even beyond its due importance. There is not one childhood memory more clear in my heart than the memories of country dances held in the large living room of Chiquaco. I can hear the music and laughter, the whooping and chatter. It wasn't just the dances themselves that I loved, but the planning for weeks and the thrill of the first headlights coming down the hill to reflect off the top of the windmill, followed by the headlights of a long line of cars coming to our dances. My Irish mother fussed thoroughly about these dances, spending days waxing the brick floors on her knees, with her head wrapped up in a red bandana, washing windows and baking pies. My daddy, on the other hand, was easygoing, putting off till the last minute the evening milking, and cleaning his boots with his pocket knife in the kitchen as the first guests would arrive, smiling with easy charm while mother cleaned up the mess. The dances were the center stage of daddy's life, the fiddle player his director, and each fat or skinny, pretty or homely woman his adoring fan. The neighbors would come from miles away, the wife with starched petticoat and special cake, and the man, freshly shaven, smelling like the whiskey bottle tucked under his arm. The children came too, very much a part of these nights, running loud and boisterous in and out of the Virginia reel, playing hide-and-seek through the rambling, dark adobe rooms. We giggled, dancing with timid boys. Step one, two, one, two. Weren't we good at it, too? For days before, we practiced dancing around the brick floor, often the palm of our own hand on the imaginary cheek of our boyfriend. We would eventually fall asleep on a pile of coats to be awakened at dawn when the party ended and the morning milking needed doing. Perhaps it is the fact that those days and times are gone forever that make those nights so important to cherish. My children are making their own memories now, but those type of country people with their complete openness coming from so far away as families to dance, drink, and visit, no longer seem to exist. I have a sketch of a country dance hanging in my new home, and this sketch is titled Before Santa Fe Bars. The children in this picture are laughing, weaving in and out of dancing couples. The women poke their heads out of the kitchen, gossiping. A fat lady dances with a tall man, and a baby sits on a daddy's shoulder while he taps his foot to the music. This picture is a part of my childhood, my past. Those people came to Chacoaco with rustling skirts and Stetson hats. The faces now become clear in my mind as I see each one. I can even feel Daddy lifting me to his shoulder to dance high above the floor, twirling fast to the quick beat of the fiddle.
That's it.
Wow.
So do you have more on the book tour, or have those been completed already?
No, I think it's complete.
I drove 2,800 miles in 2 weeks.
Wow. Oh, so I bet there were huge celebrations. So did you do them in the towns where the stories were from, or what was?
Yeah, certainly in Santa Fe and Taos, yes, and in Tucumcari. I didn't do a workshop in Amarillo, but it happened that three of the writers from the book moved from New Mexico to Amarillo. So that's why we did our reading there too.
No, in your biography, one thing, and of course, you know, having this, doing this, our radio thing, but you had a half hour program called The American Mosaic with, where you did this. So tell us about that. And are those anywhere archived that people could listen to them?
Yes. If you have a community radio, access to a community radio station, your station may run, American Mosaic Radio. And if they don't, just keep calling and annoy them until they finally give up and put it on the schedule. Yes, we did 52 weeks, is my recollection, and 52 episodes. And more than half of them were actually read by the authors, because when I would go back out to Santa Fe, for example, and I would take my tape recorder with us.
That sounds like something that would make a great podcast. Like, did you have access to those recordings?
Yes. Well, I should do that, but then you see I need an intern. I need a volunteer.
Well, maybe I could help you out with that. You know, we could find a place to put that out there, because that way people could listen to them anytime, trying to get a radio station to pick it up and play it. But, you know, that sounds like a resource that should be available for people. And
great.
So maybe
I love that.
Chat after the show.
It could be right on your website, right?
It could just be published
right on the website.
Yeah, depending on how your website's set up, but we could, you know, we'll chat about that. That'd be great.
Beautiful. That'd be beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, one thing I do want to say is that one of the riches of doing this is not only collecting the stories, but getting to know those people. And this relates to what Sue West was saying. She says, those country people are gone forever. And I find a lot of the people that I knew over the years in these regional cultures are gone forever. Not simply just, I mean, my friends, some of them are still alive. Many of them have passed on, but they're not making them like that anymore, because the culture has become so mechanized. And we're so indebted to technology. It just creates a different kind of individual. And so the richness that I found when I was on the road, I can't duplicate.
Yes. And actually part of that book, when you're introing the person and that person has passed, it makes it so much more poignant, you know, and it makes you realize how important it is to gather and write these stories within families as well.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you're listening to our guests today, Robert Wolf and Bonnie Kolak on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. You know, I had a question. Having seen Working develop into a musical, not necessarily this would, but this sounds like it would have the fodder to be a well, either a stage reading or actually partially staged production. I mean, some of these stories are just so compelling. It would be, have you ever thought about doing that?
Yes, what I've done is I've created some readers' theater pieces, and some of the segments in it are my revisions, interpretations, adaptations of some of the stories that I've published. But I think that, yes, the works themselves would make a wonderful series of plays. Yeah, I mean, it's, I did, I, yes. My answer is yes, I want to do more of that. And I have used it, used these stories in my knowledge of my neighbors to write a play that was produced, and actually it was commissioned by a theater in Minnesota. It was called Heartland Portrait, and it dealt with four farm families over five decades. That was just reflecting all the thoughts, the experiences of the writers that I had worked with.
Right. It's so, I mean, the book makes it, it just brings it forth that it's so valuable just to start the conversation and to see all these stories in this book. It's just so powerful. Do you have another one in the works, like another community of people?
Yeah, here's what I want to do. I mean, my vision for years has been to do four regional compilations rather than keep them in small titles. So the first one was Heartland Portrait. Now, that's gone through two editions, and I have a third that's going to come out. That's a very large anthology. It's larger than Coyotes and Stars. And that has stories from Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa by farmers and small-town residents and commercial fishermen and others working on the Mississippi River. My plan is to do an anthology from the Mississippi Delta. I do have a lot of stories there. I do need to go down and get some more from the Arkansas Delta and the Mississippi Delta. I mean, both sides, the Mississippi and Arkansas sides of the Delta. And then the last book I want to do is a compilation of stories from big cities. So I have a number of stories already, but I need to get more. In other words, stories from Chicago, New York, Pittsburgh, you name it.
So I'm going to refer back to the homeless community in particular. Did these books become a starting point for the city did the information in them help, or any of the books help the cities that were mentioned?
I can't say that they did. But the writers oftentimes were. Some of the writers then continued to write on their own.
Oh, that's wonderful.
A few instances of where the writers became journalists, for small papers.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's helped them in other ways psychologically, yes.
And my second thought, too, is adapting this to a film. Not just this particular book, but you have such a wide base of stories that you could tell. Each one could probably be like either a film short or actually, put together in a feature. I realize that would have to have like a screenplay type thing, but you ever thought about that?
I would love it. It's so daunting, getting an agent or whatever you have to, whatever steps you have to take. And I'm 81 years old, but yes, I would love to do it, but I would need help again on that. If someone out here hears it, give me a call.
Maybe it's time to do a series on film directors and producers.
Right. On the creative forces behind film. Yeah. Why don't we hit one more little story? We have about 5 minutes left here, and we want to hear one more.
All right. Bonnie will read one by Dolores Griego. The backstory is that I just met Dolores once. I think she came to one day of a writing workshop. I had never met her before, but I knew her husband. He and I had taught school, 7th and 8th grade, in Española, New Mexico, for 2 years. Yeah, we'd commuted every day. We'd commuted together up from Santa Fe up to Española and back. So this is Dolores' story, and I think it's the importance of this story is what it tells us about New Mexico culture, the Hispanic culture.
La Escuela Formation. My parents were our first teachers. Our learning center was a solid rectangular wooden table with two drawers underneath, where the important documents and other mementos were kept under lock and key. The table was made to order by my father's brother, Nazario, who was an excellent carpenter and cabinet maker. It was around this solid, polished kitchen table that my two brothers and I were fed, body, soul, and mind. We were taught responsibility, honesty, commitment, and integrity. We were taught to respect not only the elderly, but all others. We were advised to be friendly and to choose our friends wisely. They would say, "Tell me who you hang out with, and I'll tell you who you are." It was at the table that we would sit around during the long winter nights to learn about our parents and what it was like when they were growing up. We also learned about our grandparents, Mama and Papa Grande, and our ancestors. We learned the satisfaction of hard work, the value of money, and to make do or do without. We were taught how to pray and would not jump into bed before we knelt and recited our nightly prayers. We addressed the holy and blessed angel of Guardia, asking for protection in the night. We would then remain kneeling to receive the blessing of our father and mother. We had a very loving and secure childhood, which was the foundation of our learning. As long as our parents were there, I felt that nothing and no one would harm us. My happiest childhood memories are in the 300-year-old adobe house, where we were surrounded by their unconditional love. They taught us through stories that had a moral, but more important, by their example.
That's Bonnie Kolaki reading from Coyote Star's Stories from the American Southwest. We only have a couple minutes left. We've talked about your projects and everything, but we want to maybe give you a chance to tell how people can find your book, but all the books, and any more information about you, Bob.
Yes. They can go to Free River Press, F-R-E-E, riverpress.org, and you'll get most of the books there on that website. You can also check out my website and some of my books at robertwolfthewriter.org.
Excellent.
What about what's coming up next year? Can you mention it a little bit?
Okay, I have a wonderful book that that I wrote. Of course it's wonderful. it's called The Great Wheel, and it's a book-length prose poem that took me 33 years to write, and it's published now by Squeeze Press in the UK. It's an imprint of Wooden Books, a really wonderful, wonderful publisher, and I'm very pleased. It's the one work that I'm most proud of. It's a history of Britain, you might say, from its mythical origins through the Dark Ages.
Excellent.
Sounds great. Real quick, Bonnie, anything you have coming up, any concerts or anything like that?
I do. In fact, on September 6th, I'm going to be in Evanston at the Pope Festival there. I'm not going to do a concert, but I am being interviewed by Marilyn from Midnight Special. And that'll be about an hour. And then later, November 30th, I will be again once more at Space in Evanston with my band. And I also will be there. They are inducting Steve Goodman into the Illinois Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And they've asked me to come there and talk about Steve during a big show they're having in the middle of September. I think it's either the 19th or 20th.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. Bob Wolf, Coyotes and Stars, Stories from the American Southwest, available at his website. We'll have a link on his picture on our website. Bonnie Kolaki also there to give us other readings. Thank you so much for coming back on Art in the Air and sharing your literary journey and your adventures.
Thank you so much, Larry and Esther both. Thank you so much.
Thank you both so much.
Greetings from Billy and Renee Foster.
We are musicians, jazz radio show hosts, and advocates for the arts.
Congratulations
to Art on the Air and its dedicated hosts, Larry Breckner and Esther Golden.
We want to thank you for this outstanding program and exceptional service to our arts community.
No better way to stay informed as to what's happening in the arts than to listen to this informative show.
Not only do we get the information, but the opportunity to listen to the thoughts of the artists themselves.
We wish you many wonderful years of success.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.